Welcome to the Terrorist Therapist Show. I'm Dr. Carol, your terrorist therapist, and I'm here to help you and your family reach your dreams despite living in a time of terror. Well, of course, today we're going to be talking about the Orlando shooter who was gay and at the very least struggling with his latent homosexuality, which wasn't always so latent. And that's why he targeted this club, Pulse, to attack. Now, you know, it wasn't just a gay hate crime, as some might like to claim, but he was an equal opportunity shooter. He was a terrorist. He hated non-believers in Islamic extremism. He hated Americans and he hated gays because he hated himself. He was struggling with the homosexuality latent in himself, which then would pop out every once in a while and express itself. Although, so far, I'm waiting for someone to come forward, hopefully in telling the truth, not just someone who wants media attention, but someone to come forward and say that they, in fact, slept with Omar Mateen. I wouldn't be surprised if that happens. So what we're talking about is the tragic terrorist attack of June 12th of the Pulse gay nightclub in Orlando by Omar Mateen, a 29-year-old American-born Muslim coming from Afghan parents. 49 people were killed by him, and then he was killed by the police. 53 were wounded. This was the deadliest shooting in U.S. history and the deadliest terrorist attack since 9/11. So I want to put Omar on my couch today and see all the signs that were missed by his, well, I was going to say by his family, but I'm not really so sure that they were missed by his family per se. I think especially his father knew exact, and his second wife, his current wife, the wife that he had at the time of the shooting, did know more than they're telling. So let me go back to when I found out about it. I was in my car heading home. I heard about it on the radio. I felt angry about all the people who had been killed. I felt angry that there was yet another terrorist attack and one that was so devastating, you know, second only to 9/11. We Americans are in such a state of denial, although with each attack, I mean, after 9/11, Boston Marathon, and then of course, I mean, the San Bernardino attack recently, and now this one. I mean, the only good thing about these attacks is that it is waking Americans up from their sleep, from putting their head in the ground, which is important in order to be able to become more resilient to future terrorist attacks. So here I am hearing about this, feeling angry, not only feeling angry about terrorists and terrorism and Islamic extremists and all of that, but feeling angry and unprotected by our government, by President Obama, who has done more than any other president to make us vulnerable to terrorist attacks. And in fact, I call him a domestic terrorist himself, I think consciously or unconsciously, because of his own roots, Muslim roots, and being taught in the Middle East. You know, I don't think that he has, at least unconsciously, given up all of those things that he was taught, the extremist views that he was taught. And angry, particularly at the FBI. And this, I want to encourage all of you to insist that the FBI doesn't let people continue to slip through the cracks, people who then go on to commit terrorist attacks. So let's put good old Omar Mateen, good old, on the couch. Starting with his, you know, whenever you put somebody on the couch, whenever I do as a psychiatrist, The first thing that you have to look at is their childhood and their parents and so on, what kind of influences they had and what kind of traumas they had when they were young. So clearly, Omar's father is a piece of work. Not only is he homophobic, but he is a supporter of the Taliban. And in fact, his father is what explains the best what Omar was doing in that nightclub committing this terrorist attack, because he was trying to prove to his father that he was a man, that he was not only that he wasn't gay, but that he was even better than his father in terms of the extreme Islamic cause. His father has a YouTube channel and was actually working with a regular channel in which he would support the Taliban and would pretend to be the Afghan president or a candidate for the Afghan presidency and actually talk as if he were already the president of Afghanistan. So the psychological problems that Omar has had come from the psychological problems of his father. And in fact, his father was fired from this internet channel, this YouTube kind of channel, and one has to wonder why and whether they recognized some psychological issues that made him unfit to continue to be on the channel. So he was born in New York, and he was moved with his family to Florida. He went to one high school and then for a year, and then went into another high school after getting into a fight with a student. At this school, one of his schoolmates said that he was bullied. What's interesting is that three of his classmates told the media that Mateen cheered in support of the hijackers during the September 11th attacks. And then there's another report that on September 11th, his father would beat him, which is a little confusing, you know, if he was, why that happened on that date, unless, that I would love to know why that happened, and maybe it will come out in the investigation. He was arrested when he was 14 after a fight in school. He experimented with marijuana. He then went to a criminal justice training program, and he was graduated from Martin County Adult Vocational School in 2003, where he earned an Associate of Science degree in criminal justice technology. I mean, imagine that. Well, he earned that from Indian River State College in 2006. And he got a job as a prison guard and then as a security guard and so on. I mean, the irony of all of this is frightening. You know, that he somehow was able to pass the background checks for these kinds of jobs. And, you know, that, of course, points up such a failure in our system. And you know, there have been a number of reports from neighbors and just various people that that Omar came in contact with during his life, where some people would in fact know about these arrests and these, you know, questionable behavior and so on. And other people would say that he was incredibly polite, and obviously he was able to fool them through these background checks. So getting back to his father, who, you know, has pretended after the attack that he didn't know, he doesn't think his son was gay, that he didn't know his son was gay, he's not sure if he's gay, and he told a story about how his son got upset when he saw two men kissing fairly recently. But, you know, what did he really not know that his son was gay? Did he really not know that his son had extremist sympathies. You know, did he beat him because the son cheered for this September 11th terrorists? That doesn't seem to make sense, since his father seemed to have those kinds of sympathies himself. I think that his father sexually abused him. That's what I think. I think that he was that Omar was sexually abused, if not by his father, then by some other man, perhaps by a friend of his father's, or some man. And at the very least, his father didn't protect him from this abuse, sexual abuse, if in fact he didn't abuse him himself. What's interesting too is that we haven't heard much from Omar's mother. The only thing that came out very recently was that during the attack, during these early morning hours of June 12th, the attack occurred between 2 and 5 a.m. And during this time, Omar's mother called Omar's second wife to ask if she knew where Omar was. And at the time, the wife said, in any case, that she didn't, and this was during the attack. So what did his mother know? Is she, and will she come clean at some point later on? I mean, clearly she is probably not going to do anything that her husband doesn't want her to do, but all of this is left to be seen. Now let's talk about Omar's first wife. We're following, again, I have Omar on my couch. I'm following his life chronologically, trying to analyze him and all of the warning signals that he gave off. Now, in 2009, he married a woman, Satora Yusufi, who he met through MySpace. He met his second wife online as well. But anyhow, he married this woman and who moved to Florida to be with him. And until she was rescued by her parents, who came to visit and soon realized how abusive Omar was. So she said at the beginning of their marriage, he was very sweet and fun-loving and so on. But after a while, she realized that there was something wrong with him. She has described him as traumatized. Now, which is another reason why I believe that he was sexually abused as a child. She said he had a temper. He took steroids, which of course, contributes to people having uncontrollable rage attacks. She describes him as insane, abusive, physically and emotionally abusive, mentally unbalanced. She also described him as bipolar, though it's not clear that he was ever diagnosed that by a psychiatrist or any other doctor. But she has wondered while they were married whether, in fact, he was gay. She said he would preen in front of the mirror. He had certain bodily movements that made her think of him as possibly gay. And most of all, the selfies that he took. Not just that he took selfies, but the way that he posed in the selfies. And I know you were thinking this. I was thinking this. To tell you the truth, the first picture that I saw of Omar at the very beginning of all of this, the first selfie that the media posted, the first thought I had was that this man is gay. Now that may be psychologically and politically incorrect, not psychologically, but politically incorrect, because, theoretically one isn't supposed to just tell how somebody looks. But at the same time, I know you were thinking it. I was thinking it. And in fact, as the news unfolded, it turned out that he was, is. In other words, that he was struggling with this in himself. I mean, he isn't anymore, but until his death, he was struggling with that. So then they got divorced. After several months of marriage and her parents rescuing her, they came down to visit in Florida and they rescued her. And then Omar was free to marry his second wife, who is really a mystery and who still may be charged for knowing that he was planning this attack and not doing anything to report it. She married him in 2011. They have a 3-year-old son. What's interesting about her, that although she was born in America, her parents were Palestinian. So, you know, did she really not know that he was planning this, or did she condone this, or at least partially condone this? I mean, presumably she wouldn't have wanted her husband to die in the attack, or would she have, to be a martyr? She, in fact, was may well have been, I believe that she was, in fact, complicit in the attack. She has been reported to have visited certain places that he was doing surveillance on, including the Pulse nightclub. It's just like the San Bernardino couple. You know, what is this? These people learn that couples who shoot together stay together. It's this whole idea of couples being involved in these attacks is something that needs to be studied more, investigated more, and what, especially because of the fact that in the wife's background, just like in the San Bernardino attack, there is something that at least unconsciously would have made them want to go along with this attack. It isn't that they were these innocent victims, you know, oh my God, my husband is going to do a terrorist attack. He's an Islamic extremist. Really? That's terrible. No, that didn't happen. He also was beginning, if he didn't actually abuse her, which of course would also explain why she would go along with his putting himself in danger. If he didn't abuse her literally, physically, then he did start the cycle of abuse in that he isolated her from her family. And from driving, he didn't want to let her drive. Just recently did he let her take the test to get her license. And he wouldn't allow her to visit her family, who were in California, even when her father was dying. She got together money and managed to see him before he died, but her husband wouldn't give her the money to go visit him. And these are the early stages of what an abusive spouse does. First, isolate the woman from her family and friends and so on, and work and so on, driving. So this is very typical. And some reports place her in a gun store with him. So again, you know, could this have been prevented? Absolutely. Did these people know? I mean, the father, the mother, the first wife, the second wife, absolutely. You know, and they had their reasons for not telling. But what about the FBI? They didn't have any reasons for not telling. They're supposed to be protecting us. And that's, you know, so it's not only a matter of being angry at the shooter, of course, and being angry at terrorists, being angry at extremists, of course. But also, don't we need to be a little angry at the FBI and other agencies that are supposed to be protecting us, our government, the president? Yes, we are. And we need to change that. Omar was a gay man trapped in a Muslim family. He was not able to tell his father that he was gay, you know, which is part of the problem, that if there wasn't so much of a, you know, if Muslims, or at least extremist Muslims, didn't throw gays off buildings or stone them, then maybe they wouldn't have to hide their rage. They wouldn't have to hide who they really are. And because that's what's part, it's not just Islamic extremism, and at least in Omar's case, it's also the rage the self-hatred and the rage at having to hide who he is, who his identity is, not being able to be accepted by his family. When he killed the gays at Pulse, he killed his own latent homosexuality, the part of him that scared him. And his father has said on YouTube that, he said God should be the one to punish gays. Like he was trying to say it doesn't have to be or shouldn't be man who punishes gays, but God. I mean, so the point is, why should anybody be punishing gays? Now, what's interesting, too, is Omar's latent homosexuality in terms of his flirting with coming out of the closet. No one, as I said, has yet said they had actually had sex with him, but people have said that he would bump into them at clubs. One man said that he asked if he was gay and that if he was gay, he was my kind of man. He was saying, you know, you would be my kind of man. He supposedly went into gay chat rooms and dating apps. There's certainly a man who said that he would talk with him on a dating app. A dating app. There we go. a gay dating app for a year. And so, you know, these were all signs of his inner struggle. What's also interesting, as with many terrorists, there's this idea of wanting notoriety. So Omar, during the attack, made 911 calls, pledging his allegiance to ISIS, you know, wanting to make sure he is known as doing this for ISIS. He also left Facebook messages to say that. He also called a TV newsroom and said, I did it for ISIS. I did it for the Islamic State. And it's interesting how yes, of course, terrorists want to be known, want to be martyrs, and want to be known as doing it for the Islamic State and doing it for, you know, on behalf of terrorism and attacking America and so on. But it's almost like the lady doth protest too much, methinks. You know, in other words, not wanting to say that it had anything to do with homosexuality or his homosexuality, but that I did this for ISIS. So, again, let's go to the, I know what you're thinking also about if we didn't, maybe we should have more gun control. We shouldn't sell automatic weapons. We shouldn't sell guns. There should just be a clampdown on selling guns. Because this is scary. And I used to be for gun control because I'm an anti-media violence activist. I have tried to teach people that media violence, I mean, you know, there have been incredibly, an incredible amount of studies showing that media violence causes people to become more aggressive. So I was for more gun control. But ever since Obama got into office, I've changed my mind. I now see, you know, there's the idea that with the Constitution, you know, America, the Second Amendment and so on, and that was to protect America's freedoms. And I thought, well, you know, we don't need to, our government would always protect us and we don't need to have arms ourselves. And yes, the more people who have guns, the more people who die, especially when there are children in the house. There have been studies that show that it's more likely that a child will get killed than that the person will need it for criminals, you know, for thieves and so on. But now I see with Obama getting into office that we may well need to have guns to protect ourselves against our own government, not only terrorists and not only criminals, you know, robbers who come to our house or other kinds of criminals. So I don't believe in gun control now, but I do believe that we need to have terrorists on a watch list, just like Omar was not. I mean, he had been investigated by the FBI twice. And now there's a story that comes out that the gun store told the FBI that there was a man who came in there not only looking for guns, but also asking about body armor, which they didn't sell. And so on. And they warned, they picked up that there was something wrong with him, that there was something that was going to go down. But they called the FBI. Supposedly, the problem was that they didn't know Omar Mateen's name, and the video that they had in the store was too grainy to show who it was. You know, I think we need to fix the videos in gun stores. Hello. But anyhow, the FBI investigated Omar twice for things he was saying to his co-workers, showing that he was a terrorist sympathizer and his friend, his contact with known terrorists, an American who went to the Middle East and was a suicide bomber and so on. And yet they closed the investigations and they didn't put him on any watch list. And that was how he was able to get guns. And, you know, what needs to happen is that when the FBI investigates people for a question of terrorism, and there's enough reason to do these investigations, they should be put on a terrorist watch list that should be sent to airports and airplane companies and airlines and gun stores, any places that people can buy guns, and of course, security jobs. Like, duh, do I really need to be saying this? And I'm sure you're thinking the same thing, that is, this is like so self-evident. Why do we have to be telling the FBI this? And if we do have to tell the FBI, how safe are we? Anybody, I mean, the things that caused the FBI to investigate him to begin with were serious enough, those things that we know. And the killer is, so to speak, the killer is that the FBI has said that they wouldn't do anything differently. Really? So what does that mean? That more terrorists are going to escape their investigations? The investigations are going to be closed and they're not going to be put on terrorist watch lists and they're going to be allowed to buy guns, allowed to fly, allowed to have security jobs? I mean, this is just absurd. And it shouldn't be, you know, I've been talking about Omar being fighting with his latent homosexuality and all of that, but that should not take away from the fact that this was a terrorist act. It was just a disturbed terrorist, you know, fighting with himself about his homosexuality, but it was still a terrorist act, and the FBI was the one who was supposed to be protecting us. So we need to make the FBI take these things more seriously. You can do things like writing to your congressman, speaking out, writing online, writing to the media, calling into the media, and most of all, be very conscious with elections coming up. I mean, thank goodness it's an election year. And as I have said in a previous podcast, you need the number one issue on the ballot that you should be thinking of when you make your choices in the election is who is going to protect you the most from terrorism. Because that, yes, there are other issues, there are other things you might not agree with, and yes, it is Trump who will protect you the most, and there are other things that you might not agree with that he says, or you might not agree with his personality, but, you know, we need to think of being protected by terrorism first. Now, here's the Ask the Terrorist Therapist part of the show, where I answer your emails and questions. And Billy writes, I am gay, and I am devastated at what happened at Pulse, and I'm scared that now I'm a target. This will inspire lone terrorists to target gays. What do you think? Well, Billy, I mean, I hate to tell you this, but there are, there's such a thing as copycat crimes. People copycat things they see in the movies or on television in general. I'm not talking about gays, gay crimes in particular, but just in general, people are inspired by what they see to commit the similar kinds of crimes, like Natural Born Killers. That movie inspired couples to go across America and have serial killings. Yes, you know, there is that risk, and it is probably likely, well, we had the guy in California who was found in Santa Monica with an arsenal of weapons, and he said he was going to the gay pride parade. And now there have been varying reports as to whether he said he was going to harm anyone during the parade, but he was, we do know he was planning to go to the parade, and he did have an arsenal of weapons. So that in itself was scary. So yes, there might be that, you know, that might give some terrorists the idea, since, you know, that is not allowed. Being gay is not allowed in the Muslim religion, and particularly with Islamic extremists. So yes, it might give people the idea, but that doesn't mean that you should stop, you know, doing what you would normally enjoy. What you can do, however, is to work towards there being better acceptance of homosexuality in general, so that Muslim families and other families don't make it so difficult to be gay. So again, I want to implore you to make sure that the FBI doesn't let people slip through the cracks. We need to insist upon them doing a better job of keeping these people who they investigate on their terror watch list. Yes, everybody, you know, we have the people who say, oh, well, just because you were investigated doesn't mean that you should be on a watch list forever. You know, what if the investigation finds that you did nothing wrong or that you're not really a terrorist? Well, you know, I guess that's where the FBI needs to do a better job of erring on the side of caution. And maybe not everybody that they investigate should be on the list, but I would think the majority. It's the same thing that happened to the Sarnev brothers. The FBI investigated them and let them slip through the cracks as well. So, you know, and then the psychiatrist who committed a terrorist attack. It still boggles my mind that his supervisors allowed him to get through and didn't realize that he was a danger to society. So please make your voice heard and make sure that the FBI doesn't let people slip through the cracks. I'm your terrorist therapist, asking you to try to make sure that this doesn't happen, that the FBI doesn't let people slip through the cracks, and trying to help you by putting another aspect of terrorism on my couch and analyzing it, taking the monster out from under the bed and calming your, well, I'd like to say calming your fears by analyzing it, letting you feel more in control of what's going on by doing something about it. Each one of us can do something to fight terror.